You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Issues. I just talked to John Keenan, and he said he'd be ready. But he's not answering, which is never a good thing. Normally, one of us is screwed up. It's usually me. So, anyway, we'll see if. Just let them voicemail, send them an email, and we'll see what happens. You know, the UAS debate is an interesting one, and I don't know if I buy Captain Hovey's argument about, yeah, it's a program of record and we got to stick with it and blah blah. There is way too much in terms of capability out there. He joins us. John Keenan establishes contact. John, I don't know what I was doing. Maybe I was calling the wrong number. How are you?
No, my fault. Sorry. I know you said you were going to call, and I was busy, and I didn't hear my phone ring.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, first of all, Lieutenant Colonel type, United States Marine Corps, and author, Marine Corps Gazette author, and article entitled "Reflecting on Protect What You've Earned." So, John, thanks for doing this. Appreciate it.
Sure, no problem. Thank you.
Yeah, no. Talk first of all about you. Born and raised where?
Greencastle, Indiana, and then Indianapolis, Indiana.
Greencastle, Indiana, and Indianapolis. Where's Greencastle?
I'm sorry, did you say where is it?
Yeah, where is it?
Smack dab in the middle of the farms, in between Indianapolis and Terre Haute.
I have a sister that lives north of Indianapolis in Carmel.
Oh, yeah, that was the rival high school.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Yeah, a bunch of rich kids. I hope you guys whoop their ass.
Well, we're good at everything.
Hey, John, I don't. Are you on? If you're on a speakerphone, could you grab the handset? It's a little bit garbled.
I'm actually not on a speakerphone.
Oh, okay. All right. Anyway, go ahead. Talk about the rivalry with Carmel High School.
Oh, it was, you know, that was all the rage to talk about. You know, Carmel was probably a very different landscape, social landscape back then in the 80s than it is now.
Right, rural.
Back then it was pretty much what you'd expect from Central Indiana and then the middle of the 80s.
Right. Where'd you go to college?
I went to DePaul University in Greencastle. It's kind of a family tradition. My grandmother went there. My mom and dad met there, and that's where I was born. And then I went there eventually. So
John, there's a lot of people. Are you related to the John Keenan of the Marine Corps Gazette guy?
No relation at all.
Okay. I've
been getting that since I was a scared bald lieutenant at an officer or the basic school. So,
well, it's a famous name, and obviously gone on to been part of the Gazette. So you're writing in it. Everybody like, is that the John Keenan? I said, well, it might be his son. I'm not sure, so we'll find out. Talk to us. How does the Marine Corps get on your radar?
I'm sorry, say that again.
How does the Marine Corps get on your radar as kind of a career choice?
Well, you know, both my grandfathers were World War II vets. That was kind of the closest link I had to anything military.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a seventh grade science teacher who was the local recruiter for the Naval Academy, and that dude was just like, you know, everybody wanted to grow up and be Mr. Salmon. And he'd been a F-14 Tomcat pilot in Vietnam, and, you know,
right.
By the time he got to us as a whatever the equivalent to troops to teachers was back then, you know, he was surly and disputatious, just like any good field grade officer should be.
Wow. And so, because there's, you know, truth be told, there's not a big Marine presence in Indiana. It's they're relatively few and far between, other than those rolling around in the community. Did you attend the Naval Academy?
No, actually didn't. Nope. I went to DePaul in Greencastle.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I'm sorry.
That's
DePaul with a W, right?
Right, with a W.
Okay.
And in the same year that I had Mr. Thomas, I had Mr. Barrett, who was our social studies teacher. I would say he was probably a bigger influence specifically for the Marine Corps. Mr. Barrett was, and I don't remember the shift, but he was a Lance Corporal shaving in Pearl Harbor on the day the Arizona was bombed.
Wow. On the Arizona?
So he...
On the Arizona?
No,
he
was not on the Arizona. He was on another ship, but he was, you know, he was one of those guys who you would imagine was, you know, running around crazy trying to put out fires and figure out what to do next on his own ship the day Pearl Harbor was attacked.
That's how crazy is that? And so obviously both of them had an influence on you. You joined the Marine Corps. Where do you become in terms of MOF?
Well, I waited around to join the Marine Corps before I or after I graduated college, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I had gotten a degree in languages, so I finally figured out that I didn't want to be a bank branch manager anymore. I went to the recruiter and I said, hey, well, first I went to the OSO, and he was like, well, it's going to be 18 months before we can ship you off to OCS. And I was like, 18 months? I want to get out of town now. So I went down the street a few blocks. The Marine Corps recruiter, the enlisted recruiter was there, and they were all right there in the same building. And that started the process. I took the ASVAB. Three or four of the recruiters in the office wanted me for, you know, based on ASVAB scores. But I, in the end, it boiled down to two things. One, the Marine Corps was willing to give me a contract for SIGINT or Intel, just whatever the, you know, the combination of 02 and 26. And then I really just, I was like, you know what, if I don't ever
become, if I don't ever make it to the commission ranks, what do I want to be? You know, what at the end, you know, if I get out of 4 years, what do I want to have been? And I decided that I'd rather, you know, have been a Marine than anything else. So.
So you joined the Marine Corps and enlisted Marine. What year is it?
1995.
1995, and then talk to me about getting commissioned. So how many years? Enlisted do you do?
Barely two. Well, 15 months.
Wow.
In a very short period of time, three guys, two of me included, or four guys, me and three other guys, showed up to Major Larry Marshall's Company K Marine Support Battalion down in Corry Station in 1996. And he saw that he had four college graduates. He himself had been a MESEP graduate. His XO had been a MESEP graduate. And he, like, within minutes of all four of us arriving, he had all four of us, like, huddled over one 1995 era Lotus Word Pro computer, copying each other's format for applying to officer candidate school. In the end, three out of four of us got it, and we all went off to the 163rd OCS class that graduated in December of 1996, went on to Bravo 97 TBS.
All right, and obviously what's your MOS now?
I'm a COMO.
You're a COMO.
I'm an 0602.
All right. And talk to us about a couple of Marines. Obviously, I think you already mentioned one that have had impact on you, but talk to me about a couple of leaders in the Marine Corps and that have made huge dents in your head relative to being a leader.
I would say that probably the first one out of the gate was, there were so many in those lieutenant years, it's hard to nail them down to one, but kind of the one that sticks in my mind was a Colonel Anderson. I think his name was Jerry. I was a wing communications officer for the first 2 years. I'm not really sure why, but he took me under his wing. I think part of it had to do with the fact that within minutes, well, hours maybe, of landing on Oki, my fellow lieutenants were nice enough to shuttle me over to the CO's new lieutenant lunch. And I'm so bleary-eyed from the plane, and they get me over there, and it just kind of, it morphed into, you know, a colonel taking a lieutenant under his wing, so.
All right. Talk to your article. Reflecting on Protect What You've Earned. What's the genesis of it?
Well, the genesis of it is, I mentioned this in the article, but I went to a conference and I heard somebody basically like me saying, I don't know, you know, when are we going to get more information on it? When are we going to get, guidance from our headquarters? And I realized at that moment that I was like, you know, we shouldn't be asking for guidance from higher headquarters. When he says protect you what you've earned, it has, you know, it's a different meaning for everybody. But for us as leaders, it should mean, you know what, look around you, figure out what tools you have available to you, and use those tools. Don't use not everybody's got the same toolbox, but everybody has the same basic mission in life to make better people. So that's the genesis of it. I think part of it was later sparked by some things that I've read, and I just wanted to kind of, I know the next thing that happened after that was I came back and we saw the, Theater of War. It's a dramatization of, a Greek tragedy, I think Ajax,
okay.
Tragedy of Ajax. And that just had such a profound impact on me that I, you know, like immediately dovetailed it up or hightailed it up to my boss. We had a discussion. I said, hey, you know, I just got a lot of thoughts in my head. He was like, well, are you going to put them down on paper? I was like, huh, I never really thought about it. So I put them down on paper. And he was like, you really ought to submit this to the Gazette. And that's kind of what went from there. So, you know, back to the whole leaders that inspired me, nobody's ever actually said you should submit something you've written to the Gazette. Now, part of that is because nobody's ever really encouraged me to write either. Not to say that I haven't written ever, but I haven't really written with the express intent of submitting it for publication.
Do you find the process of writing easy, difficult?
The process of writing has never really been all that problematic for me. The process of exposing my writing to the editorial comments of others is difficult.
Oh, really? You don't take criticism well? Because the first thing they do is rip it up.
Yeah, I'm not so much the criticism well. I think that it kind of goes hand in hand with the phrase, don't take it personally, it's just business. I've never been a huge fan of that. I put effort into it, it's my effort. Of course I'm going to take it somewhat personally.
It is personal, right? I mean, I agree with you. As somebody who wrote, when somebody rips your stuff up, it is personal. To you, it is. I mean, you didn't throw those thoughts out there, you know, just to be thrashed, and you're intellectually invested in it. You took that position publicly, I agree with you. It is personal. And to me, it becomes very personal when whoever criticizes it is either does it in a backhanded way or is somewhat disrespectful or condescending. To me, then I don't mind, you know, somebody who takes you on intellectually and talks about a different, you know, or I put more emphasis on this, but it is, I agree, it is personal.
I think one of the reasons, I guess what I meant by that is simply once it's in print, you can't really take it back. And not to say that I would, but, you know, 15 days from now, after everybody's had a chance to read or, you know, get their copy of the Gazette, is there the possibility that I'm going to get a, you know, bunch of hate mail? I don't feel like I wrote that much of a challenging piece. I don't feel like I was really, I don't think it might be thought provoking. It really was not intended to be a gauntlet throwing, type piece. It may be a call to action and at some level, but that doesn't mean that somebody won't take it as a challenging piece or a gauntlet throwing piece. And what does that mean? Does that mean I get, emails telling me, you know, how little they thought of my piece? And then I'd be like, well, you know, I at least engaged in the conversation. When was the last time you did that?
There you go. Then we make it personal. It's how we do it. I love that. So welcome to the discussion. So talk to me about, do you think that the Commandant's admonition to everybody to protect, you know, what you've earned, is that well understood? Is the discussion still going on? Because to me, I'm with you. I don't think you need a secret decoder ring to figure that out. And I think he's followed up with other things like, we need to stop the jackassery. Give me your thoughts on that. Do we need a secret decoder ring for this?
I think some people feel like they do, and that's why I felt like I needed to write what I wrote. And I don't feel like I need it. I feel like every time a commandant has come out with one of these four-word phrases, I've figured it out. I'm not a Bachelor of Science guy. I'm a Bachelor of Arts, Liberal Arts, straight out of, Midwest. Right. So maybe it's because I read a lot. I probably think a lot, way too much. But if he tells me to protect what I've earned, I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to sit down and think about it and reflect. I might have to read it a couple of times. You know, I've read a lot of things that I've had to read two, three, four times. You know, you don't get Machiavelli the first time you read The Prince. You have to read it a couple of times. And so I might have to think about it and ponder on it, but I don't need a decoder ring. I got it. Right. I know protect what you've earned means to me.
All right, I want to ask you about a couple sections of the and I'm with you, and I think a lot of times, and General Mattis loves this kind of stuff. You know, he had all these little phrases, and really what he used to, what he was big on was, hey, look, I need a phrase that chunks information, all right, where you can, you'll get a bunch of it, right? So first, do no harm, right? What does that mean? Right. And, you know, you would have NCOs having discussion about that. No better friend, no worse enemy. What does that mean? And this constant idea of we come in peace. And he, you know, guardian angels, all these little short kind of advertising slogans that are very pregnant with meaning. And I think that, you know, I think General Neller, knowing him as I do, I think he's trying to, you know, communicate, you know, this, hey, some of the stuff that we see and do is stupid, all right? I'm going to ask you this before I ask you about the section, because the first one I want to ask you about is leadership isn't legislated, programmed, automated, or emailed. So I want you to expand on that. But the backdrop of this is I have two sons. One's a captain, one's a second lieutenant. Soon to be, mercifully, a first lieutenant, right? So it's interesting. I would tell you as an observation, the Marine Corps doesn't want to be about consequences anymore. Stuff that I would say, that guy goes to NJP. Oh, no, you know, we just counseled him and blah, 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 blah. Nobody wants to be the bad guy, it seems to me, anymore. And it seems like there's less good order and discipline because a lot of people don't want to be the bad guy. And so I don't know if that's a fair criticism. Maybe it's the lament of every old Marine. So on that backdrop, talk to me about leadership isn't legislated, programmed, automated, or emailed. Tell me what that means.
Well, first I'd like to make a direct comment in sure. response to what you just said. And it's not in response to what I said, but what I wrote. I think there is a certain amount of, I can see that point that you're making, although I would say on some level, some number of our Marines who have gotten in trouble for whatever their offense is, those Marines would argue the point that maybe the hand was too heavy. And right. I think the point that I'm making there is, somewhere in their chain of command, it's exactly what you're saying. Somewhere in their chain of command, there needs to be somebody who is morally outraged by their actions. It doesn't have to result in NJP, but we've lost the moral outrage. I had one of those great stories. I had an XO, Mike Hunter, who was a Stinger guy. I was a lieutenant, and he was convinced. And I think this was maybe a lieutenant story that he told me, but basically he's like, look, I'm your XO, and if I'm doing a good job, I'm probably not going to be the guy you like. And I'm dressing it up, you know, he said, but if I'm doing my job, nobody likes the XO. That means that the CO doesn't have to be the bad guy. So if you're doing your job, a CO can step in and protect the Marines from you, and he doesn't have to be the bad guy. In order to do your job, you have to have a sense of moral outrage. If these guys are involved in an alcohol-related incident, you have to see that as a stain on the institution. And I'm probably extending a little bit because my memory is a little fuzzy on exactly what he said. But basically, you know, I took that and I ran with it. And for the next 16 months, I went without any NJPs. And the two disciplinary actions that I had, one of them was completely out of my control. The other one I did attempt to resolve, and the Marine was smarter than I was, and he outsmarted himself and me and got in much bigger trouble than I could have ever saved from. But I think, you know, the lesson from Mike Hunter was, you know, adopt a sense of moral outrage. You don't have to be actually morally outraged. But if you go to the boss, if you want to crush these guys, as a lieutenant, you have very little power. But you want to crush these guys, then that lieutenant colonel who actually does have power isn't forced into a position where he has to choose between NJP, which has dramatic life-altering effects right. in the immediate,
right.
or nothing.
No, you know, I agree. And again, I've never been, I subscribe to the Vito Corleone School of Leadership. Your protection money to me is showing up for work every day, sober, on time, and working your ass off. If you do that, I can save you from stupid stuff. Okay.
Right.
Now there's some stuff I can't save you from. Okay. But there's some stuff I can. And if you do that on a consistent basis and you're a good, hardworking Marine and you screw up, like you don't show up to work on time because you got drunk in San Diego and you overslept and now you're a half hour late and we're already, moving to the range. Right. I can probably protect you from that. But if you don't do that, I can't protect you from that. And I won't protect you from that. And the truth is, I shouldn't protect you from that. In my opinion, what I see, and I would relate this to force preservation boards. You sit on force preservation boards. Have you ever sat on one?
Yes, I do.
Right? And you listen to this litany of issues, and I would put the folder down and say, do we honestly expect that this human being is going to be a full-up round Marine someday and deploy with all the stress that's involved in that? When did we become a social services organization? And I'd say discharge them, get them out of here. They don't belong on. We'll monitor them till they're discharged. Start the package yesterday. And so to me, we are a combat organization, and I think that let me stop there.
I'll take us back to what you first asked, and then I'll take us.
Yeah, take me to your leadership isn't legislative program to automated your email.
That generated from a number of different places, but over time, the first thing I saw was people wanted to send emails and they wanted, as I made a joke or somewhere in the article, leadership ain't necessary. Emails do not mean that. It's just an email. It doesn't mean you're able to lead. That just means you're able to admire the problem and articulate the problem. I don't think that email is a way to do it. I think the other thing that I've seen is we try and come up with these programs that get people to help that you're talking about without really understanding the nature of the problems. I think that, yes, I agree. If there's no hope of somebody becoming a full-up round, there may not be much we can do for them.
Right.
But there's probably something that somebody can do for them if that person is a compassionate leader. I think that a lot of times our leadership give up on people and they think, oh, well, that person shouldn't need to be led, or this person shouldn't need to be led. They should just be able to figure it out.
Right.
Not everybody has that skill set. Not everybody's innately bred with the tools to figure it out. I think by and large, we do recruit from a population, or we have recruited over time from a population that does figure it out. But I don't think that everybody is necessarily gifted at that.
Okay, fair enough. Talk to me.
The people who are the best leaders sit down and individually analyze their strengths and weaknesses, the strengths and weaknesses of their people, and they say, okay, this guy has really, really good X, Y, Z skills, and I want to groom him to be better. And in order for me to figure out how to make those skills work for me, I might have to get inside his head a little bit and figure out what makes him tick. And even if that means I have to accept the fact that he does have some character is probably not the right word, but he might have some things in his background that I have to figure out how to work through for him, and maybe I have to enlist MCCS or family support or whatever. But frankly, I think that I have the tools to do that myself. I don't need to enlist those resources unless it's really bad. And at that point, I probably do need to say, you know what, this is a full-up round that may never happen.
My guest today on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio during the Marine Corps Gazette Hour is Lieutenant Colonel John Keenan, United States Marine Corps, prior enlisted intelligence guy, currently a communicator, John, where are you stationed right now? What are you doing?
I am stationed in New Orleans, and I'm the IG for the Force Headquarters Group, the Inspector General for the Force Headquarters Group.
All right. Talk to me about another piece, Shed Negative Leadership. Shed the Negative Leadership. Tell me, give me the point, give me the thrust of that in terms of protect what you
learned. I've seen a number of leaders in even in the last couple of years that I think want to return to a Marine Corps where they can expect rote attention to detail, strict adherence to orders, and the consequences from variance, the consequences of variance to that plan are harsh and quick. But I don't think that that necessarily is the formula for good leadership anymore. I think that the Marine Corps has to evolve to the society from which we recruit. And I was particularly well adapted to that particular leadership, style. I don't think everybody liked me. I'm convinced that there are more and more people in the Marine Corps who need a more engaged style of leadership, a more, you know, hey, this is what the mission is about, this is why we're doing it, rather than just, hey, here's the mission, we're doing it, and you have 20 minutes to plan, or you have 2 days to plan, or whatever. And I'm oversimplifying to make my point, but I think that there's a point at which engaging with the Marines and explaining the why is actually a good thing. They get it. Well, I think I was the anomaly, in the sense that I was 25 when I enlisted. The average 18-year-old out of high school had a lot more book knowledge, even as a, you know, just general purpose enlistee, than I had at the same age. And to deny them the opportunity to understand the minute, is denying ourselves the opportunity to garner the devotion to duty that another generation had without that explanation. We'd like to return to where we want to return to where we don't have to explain ourselves. But the fact is,
yeah, but I don't know. I think that's a fairy tale, though. I don't think the Marine Corps has ever been that way. And I think people that will tell you that, I mean, consider World War II Marine Corps. You know, I mean, a lot of those guys were drafted. You know, some of them, I mean, it wasn't that way. The Marine Corps expanded in a huge way. And so sometimes a fairy tale, you know, doesn't really jive with reality. I think the question is, there's certain circumstances when you can explain and certain circumstances when you can't explain. And so, they need to know that when you can, you will, when you can't, you won't. And you need to communicate that. The Israelis had this thing, and it was a tactical thing, but I thought it was good. When an officer was going to give somebody an order that he knew they wouldn't understand, he used the phrase, "Do it now." And that what "do it now" communicated was, I know you don't understand this, but I don't have time to explain it to you. I will when I can. Go. Okay, you know what? And so to me, that's better leadership. Okay, I don't, and again, I think it can't be Burger King. So talk to me under the broad heading of shed negative leadership. It can't be, everyone can't have it their way. And when you attempt to do that, you weaken the organization. So talk to me about having it your own way. Negative leadership. Tell me how that works.
I agree that you need to have that moment where you don't have time to explain. But I think we have, in the midst of, at least in the recent memory, we've had an awful lot of those moments where people have said, we don't have time to explain. And I don't think that that's necessarily true. I think people use that as a shield for, I don't want to explain.
Yeah.
That's different.
That's bad leadership.
And if you don't develop the trust and confidence of people before you start employing that as a shield, then all you do is generate people who don't really trust you or believe in you. And I've seen this in practice. And maybe when you're ducking from gunfire in Fallujah or Anbar province, that is an appropriate mechanism for delivering orders. I don't think back in garrison where we're not under fire, that's ever an appropriate mechanism.
Oh, I would absolutely disagree with you, because you train in garrison the way you'll fight. And there are times that you don't have time to explain in garrison what you're going to do. And if they don't understand it in garrison, they're sure as hell not going to understand it in combat. And so I would disagree with you. It sounds to me, John, that this leadership style that you're trying to define for me is a very needy. It is not unit centric. It's individual centric. And I know there's a combination that you have to get to as a good leader, all right? But I don't think it can be. I would fundamentally disagree with you relative to the Burger King connotation that you're describing for me.
Well, maybe I don't debate. I'm not going to get into it. I don't really know that it's appropriate to debate it. I think that it has worked for me pretty well, and I think that by and large, 80% of your people are going to fit into the broad range of leadership styles that the Marine Corps has to offer. You're going to have 20%, and the way you bring those 20% back into line is a certain amount of stylized leadership.
All right. No, and I'll tell you what, absolutely agree with you on that. Talk to me about we are the messengers. What does that mean?
Well, I think that some number of people who aren't getting it, and I have to admit that I was a prisoner of the timing of the Gazette when it came to publishing my article. I wrote this 4 months ago. I wrote it back in September.
Okay.
At that time, I had seen people, and I'm not going to say that I still see people, but I have heard people, even as recently as before Christmas, say, "Where's the effect of what? What's the deal with all these posters around the head shed or stuff like that?" And I think that. That's the point. That's an indicator to me that people aren't personalizing the mantra by the current commandant. I think people are expecting this to go away, or the same way that total quality leadership did, and it's not the same. Total quality leadership was a completely different mechanism for delivering a message. It was not, and so for them to equate the two in my mind is disrespectful of the commandant and his mm-hmm. message.
When I was a second lieutenant, General PX Kelly was the commandant of the Marine Corps, and the poster that was up in our office as platoon commanders was a poster of him with his in his Charlies, with all his Vietnam ribbons and stuff on, and he had a ton of it, with his hands on his hips looking at the camera. And the caption was, "You're the Corps' best advertisement." So I don't think what General Neller doing is anything new. I'm with you in terms of, you don't need to fuck this thing to death. I think it's pretty self-explanatory. You work really hard to become a Marine, one, and then to get promoted, to earn better assignments. Don't do stupid stuff that that you know, that you know, gets you into the world of NJP and essentially ends your career, because you have a great opportunity here in front of you to do great things, and the Marine Corps is a great organization. But I'm with you, though. There's a connection, I think, that has to take place between leaders and those they lead, where they have to understand that you care about them, that they have to understand that you might always not agree, but that you're hardworking, you're respectful, and that you'll listen. And to me, when you forge that connection, then you have a chance to influence them. And as a leader, that's what you want. You want a chance to be able to get into their chest cavity, grab their heart a little bit, and hopefully move it and influence them like the great leaders that we've all been influenced by. So I don't know so much of that has changed. In the writing of your article, John, is there one thing that you really would take an aim at in the article?
No, when you're in the IG chain, you see every complaint that comes into your command. You hear about all number of complaints because you read the SAPR files, you read the EO files,
right.
Read the SACO files, so you know who's doing, you know, who's doing the things that result. And, you know, who's actually exhibiting risky behaviors that result in NJP. I was taking aim at the things that I've seen that I think could have been solved by people who are saying, you know what, you're an anomaly, get out of my core. Rather than saying, you know what, you've got a problem, I think I can figure out what's going on with your problem if I just understand what's making you tick. And you may still end up out of my core, but at the end of the day, you're going to know that there's somebody who cares behind this shiny stuff on my collar.
Right. Which to me is the absolute most important piece. You can have whatever kind of personality, you can come from whatever part of the country, but when somebody cares about you, there's nothing that sells like that. Has your point of view changed as an IG? You normally get to see a part of an organization that most of us aren't privy to. Has your current tour changed the way you look at all of this?
It hasn't changed the way that I look at things with regard to the article. It certainly changed the. I think it is part of what helped me figure out that I wanted to actually say something. It gave, you know, it was, this tour has been what gave voice to the things that probably were in my head before.
So affirmation to what you already believe.
Yes.
If you were to talk about some observations as an IG, do you have any, if I was a second lieutenant and I said, hey, sir, would you mind giving me some leadership advice? I saw your article in the Gazette, and I know what you do for a living. Would you mind giving me some advice? What would that advice be?
Well, the first thing is never put anything in writing that you're going to want to retract later. Even if you still believe it, you still want the opportunity for plausible deniability.
I'll tell you what. I think though, if you want to retract it or your opinion evolves, you know, it's the basis for the discussion. And you know, more guys.
Well, and I'm not really. I say that tongue in cheek.
Right.
It's not a reference to the article, although it could be perceived that way. As a second lieutenant, And probably even up through the rank of captain, I put things into emails that I was like, I look back on those days now, and I'm like, was I an idiot?
Yeah.
Why did I need to put that in an email? Why couldn't I have just picked up the phone and said it to the person? It would have been just as disrespectful as they perceived it, but at least they wouldn't have it in writing for the rest of my life.
I got into I got my ass chewed out in Iraq, in Fallujah, by a soft admiral, what's a brigadier general, rear admiral, right? Yeah, he called me and said,
yeah.
Did you actually call call my SEALs ass clowns? And then I had to defend it. I said, yes, sir. He said, why? Why would you call them that? I said, because, see, I know in my head, truth is defense and libel, right? So I said, because they're behaving like ass clowns, sir. And I said, and sir, can I tell you something? The lieutenant commander that would forward something like you, you and I both know that that's a samurai violation. So if you want to know the truth, I work with soft guys every night for 9 months. They all give me this amount of information so I can go ahead and do what we're supposed to do, which is, one, QRF you guys in case you guys get in shit, and two, move the Iraqis so they don't shoot your ass, okay? They won't tell me anything about what they're doing, okay? So he's an anomaly. He's an ass clown. And so he went, what do you mean? And I said, sir, I get this every night, and he won't give me any of that information, so that's why you're not coming in this battle space tonight. And he said, I'll take care of him. But let me give you some advice there, Major. I said, yes, sir. He says, you better be very careful what you put in the emails because they get shot around and blah, blah, blah. I said, I will, sir. I apologize if that offends you. It certainly wasn't meant for your eyes. He said, that's all right. Click. He hung up. So I feel your pain, man. I feel your pain. I've had to dance myself. So give me some advice based on your experience as an IG. Based on your leadership experience as both an enlisted Marine and as a Mustang with many years in the Marine Corps, give me some leadership advice as a young officer or an NCO.
Well, this is going to sound counterculture, and I recognize that, but I would walk in any room I walk into, and I hear the phrase, so-and-so's a good Marine. I try and tell the Marines around me, hey, look, yes, that may be true. This person is a good Marine. But let's first make sure they're a good person, because a good person is always going to be a good Marine. Right. But the reverse is not always true.
Right. Right. No, you're right about that. You're right about that. All right. So be a good person. Next.
When you look at the negative behaviors that people are exhibiting, think one step past the social impact to the Marine Corps. Don't just think about the sexual assault that was committed or the alcohol-related incident that happened. Those things have consequences, and those consequences should be quick, and they should be clear so that everybody understands that these actions have consequences. But the other thing is that person who was the perpetrator of that felt powerless enough to do the wrong thing. Why did they feel that powerless? Get inside their head. Think about what their OODA loop is and figure out why they feel so powerless, because they're probably not the only person feeling that powerless. And if they're feeling that powerless and there's more than one of them, there might be a real problem that you have. And I think that is the soft underbelly that I've seen as the idea is quantity has its own quality. And that's not my phrase. That was said to me by another IG that I really admire.
So
you see so many things at a certain unit of people doing those things. There's a message there. And it may not be the message you want to hear, but there's a message there. There's a lot of trees and somebody's not seeing a forest. If there's an EO complaint and a request mass and a sexual assault and multiply those each by three, you know, what's going on there that needs to be examined? Because it's not nothing.
All right. So when bad things happen, reflect inward before you point a finger?
Yeah.
All right. I think that's, you know, I can hear my grandmother. Remember, when you point a finger at somebody, three point back at you. I thought it was four, Grandma. No, Michael, your thumb's not a finger.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Thanks, Grandma. I'll tell you what, that's great advice because, you know, people read stuff off the blotter and people react to it. When the first thing I think as an officer you ought to do is first sergeant major, hey, will you go down there and check that out and let's sit down and make me smart about what happened? And then, slow is pro is another thing that that I ascribe to. Give me another piece of leadership advice based on your experience as an IG.
You know, it sounds silly, but the units that do well on inspections are doing well on everything. They're prepping the binders, not because prepping the binders is what you do before an inspection, but they are the ones who are paying attention to detail in every aspect of their mission. And there are others who are only paying attention to detail on the fun things in their mission. And it's obvious from the moment you walk in. I would say be the guy who pays attention to detail on every aspect of the mission.
Interesting. I got an email for you. Hey, Mac, interesting discussion. What exactly does the IG do? I had never been one. I always know that the fear of the IG strikes fear into the hearts of mortal men. What does the IG do? John, what does the IG do?
The IG is the eyes and ears for... Well, the IGMC is the eyes and ears for the Commandant. And by extension, the IG at a command is supposed to be the extension of IGMC, but they're authorized by the commander. So we're supposed to be the eyes and ears of the commander by going out and looking and seeing who is complying with the regulatory things that we've put in place. There's a core group of things that the Commandant determines, and we go out and inspect those things. There's 35 checklists. We look at those. They're largely administrative in nature. And we go out and inspect those things, and when people aren't doing them right, then we try and instruct. There are, for the most part, at least in the command that I've been operating in, and the ones that I've seen operate, it's pretty collegial inspection. We go out, we give every opportunity for them to correct themselves there on the spot. If there's not room for correction, then we've got to give them a finding or a discrepancy, and sometimes that results in a unit that has more than one missionary not effective. And if they have too many that aren't effective, then we say the whole unit's not mission capable. But that's not the norm. The norm is, people are overlooking some minor details, but they usually, with a little bit of correction, can figure it out pretty quickly what they need to get back and do to get back in the black.
All right, so you're there to help.
Yes.
Okay. Not there to scare, although it does strike fear. The IG, and certainly
there should be a certain amount of fear, because if you're it's kind of like the fear of having your phones tapped. Nobody wants to have their phones tapped. The fact is that if you're doing everything right, why are you worried about your phone being tapped?
Because most of us aren't doing everything right. That's the truth. John, what haven't I been smart enough to ask you relative to your article that you want to make sure that people know about it?
I think we've covered everything.
Really? Come on, throw me a fish. We are the messengers. Give me a final thought about that.
Don't spend a lot of time looking around for guidance from higher on protect what you've earned. There's a message, and the message is the words. Sit down, figure out what the words mean, and do it. Don't expect somebody to break it down into a Marine Corps or an Almar or an Alnav a Mar Admin, just figure out what the words mean to you and personalize it, internalize it, and use it for the good of your Marines.
All right, and it never hurts to be a good communicator and probably a bit of a listener. So all of that goes into it. Well, I'll tell you what. I've enjoyed this discussion. I love talking leadership, and I love moving the lens around. So, Lieutenant Colonel John Keenan, our guest this morning on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. John, how much longer are you going to be in New Orleans? Did you just start? Are you getting ready to leave? Any idea where
I'm
you're headed?
About halfway through my tour here, and I'm not really sure what the future holds for me. So I know we love New Orleans. We always have. And we'll just see what the Marine Corps has to say about that.
All right. Well, first of all, I enjoyed the discussion. As I said, I love talking leadership, and you're obviously a guy who studied it and thought a lot about it. So thank you very much for doing this, and hope you don't mind if in the future when we talk about these kind of issues, I give you a call and come back on and give your opinion.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks.
Okay. All right, bud. Thanks for the visit.
Thanks. Have a good day.
You bet. That is Lieutenant Colonel John Keenan. You know, I don't know that the Marine Corps changes that much. You know, you essentially, you know, you have young Americans that come in, and everybody wants to think that they're different, and everybody who's out of the Marine Corps thinks that the Marine Corps has gotten soft. Yet, it still does more with less than anybody. So, I'm sure there's changes as we've changed and as a culture. But I think it's always been the case that better leaders can play the range of characters required to be effective. And I think the first quality that, I mean, surprises a lot of people is listen. Second one is give a shit about them. And then third one is you have to put up a number. You have to make mission. You have to perform. And good leaders, and then all the tools that he talked about that the IG deals with, those are all designed to be implements that you use, programs that you maintain to keep the thing on its tracks. And so there's enough structure out there, but you cannot engineer around the guy at the top. Be it the fire team leader, be it the squad leader, be it the platoon commander. If you've got a dud in that spot, you can't engineer around them. But I think the interesting conundrum always is the group cannot run the show as individuals. There's got to be a standard. And when you're not at work on time, there's only so many excuses for that. And I think units that don't do well struggle with that. They struggle with that. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the gunner, I think, is going to join us from his hospital room. So we'll catch up with Mike today. And then depends on how much time we have. I have more Iwo Jima audio for you that we'll hear. And I'm also curious, President Bush was in the news yesterday. The Younger did an interview, I think, with NBC. So you might hear a little bit about that as we continue here on a Tuesday edition, the Marine Corps Gazette Hour, with two authors today, Lieutenant Colonel John Keenan, talking about what does protect what you've earned mean? And also Captain Eric Covey weighing in on the UAS discussion in the Marine Corps. And what his premise is, hey, if you don't know about procurement, then you might want to shut up because all you're talking is nonsense. When you understand the procurement process, then you'll see our limited revenue, you'll see our limited resources. We could certainly talk, do you want to trade something for UAS capability? We can have that discussion then. And so, but until you get inside that box, all you're doing is blowing smoke. So, interesting discussion. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Don't touch that dial. The Gunner from his hospital bed.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.